Hello, folks. Welcome to the Answers May Vary podcast. My name is Kristen Miller, and with me in the studio are Brad Nisley, Derek Schmucker, and Brandon Miller. Thanks for joining us. If you're wondering what this podcast is about, I highly recommend you listen to our short trailer episode in which Brad talks a bit about who we are and how we managed to show up on this thing called the internet. If you are like me, you probably aren't going to do that. You're just going to keep listening because you're here, so just do as you feel led, I guess. In the meantime, we're going to introduce ourselves. My name is Kristen Miller, like I said, and I am 24 years old. I work as a serviceman in the construction industry and do a bunch of odd projects for the company that I work for. And one of my hobbies is canoeing. I really enjoy that. So, Brad, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Brad Nisley, and I'm 37 years old. And for work, I sell dairy supplies. And one of my main hobbies right now is disc golf.
Okay, Derek, I think maybe you should say who you are.
Okay, I am Derek Schmucker. I work in the farming industry. I work for a local farmer. And I am 22 years old currently. And let's see. One of my hobbies is just working in the shop, wrenching on stuff, trying to get it to work better, just tinkering around in there. So it's kind of relaxing. Is there anything else you wanted to know about me?
Yeah, but it's not appropriate right now. So,
oh my goodness.
I know I haven't been introduced yet, so I shouldn't talk, but I feel like we should let the audience know that I will try to call him Derek probably, but he'll probably get called Bart a lot.
Oh, so. Yeah, actually that's fair.
That's true. That is a nickname that is, apparently allowable, maybe not by my mother, but oof. Oh well, she'll get
well,
over
your mother's not here, so
well, she'll be listening to this.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. I mean, your mom. So, who are you, sir?
This is the audio format, so they can't see who you're looking at. But yeah, no, I am okay. Brandon Miller. I work at a local, locally owned and operated bank in Hutchinson as a personal banker and also a training ambassador, so I do some training stuff there as well. That's kind of part of my job. And let's see, I'm 20 years old. Hobbies include right now, kind of one of my newfound hobbies is detailing my car that I just bought a couple months ago, so that's kind of fun, tinkering around with ceramic and exterior coatings and kind of dolling it up, so that's fun.
Awesome. And someday I want to ask you more about your job, maybe even on the podcast, because descriptions sounded interesting. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking, but yeah, yours just sounded way more official and awesome than any of the rest of our job descriptions. Yeah, so I think we'll just head right into the first segment of this podcast, which is called Open for Debate. So we intend to always have a discussion question that we discuss. And the question for today is, what should the role of Sabbath be in the 21st century Christian's life? And since that's a little bit of an out-of-the-blue question, I'm going to give you a little warm-up, I guess. So, obviously, Jews practiced Sabbath back in the day, which had been like Friday evening to Saturday evening, as I understand it, taking a day of rest and not working. And there were other rituals that went along with that. And then, somewhere along the line in the early church, they started getting together on the first day of the week, which would be Sunday. But I think the principle of Sabbath as having a day of rest is something that's been, it's kind of a creation principle, and it's been something that's really valuable. So kind of the question is, we're not in the Old Testament. Should we be practicing that or not? And what is it? Is it valuable or is it not? I guess I just said it is. Now you know my opinion. But yeah, that's kind of how I'd like to frame the question, I guess. I did not do a lot of, didn't give you a lot of background, but that's where we are. So what do you think?
Kind of to clarify for me, I guess. So I think setting aside one day a week is a good idea to, you know, rest, rejuvenate, whatever that is. But are you asking, you know, should we be practicing Sabbath more like the Jews, or is it, I guess, what the maybe the the goals, are they different for in the 21st century, or how, maybe I'm not explaining myself very well, but
are you asking if I'm talking about the ritual or the principle?
Yeah, I guess, are you asking, like, should we be practicing more of the rituals the way the Jews did or not? Or maybe maybe that has nothing to do with what you're wondering.
I'm open. I mean, we can talk about either of those. Sorry, that's. I wasn't thinking of the ritual specifically. Mm-hmm. I was thinking more of, and maybe I'm already jumping to the 21st century part and putting it in my own experience of Sunday. I was kind of thinking, is Sunday, is that mm-hmm. something that should be kept as a day of rest? And so maybe that's jumping ahead of the gotcha, game there. But
yeah. So
yeah, good question though. I'm not sure I have a definite answer. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah. So kind of like we're asking ourselves, how should we be having a day of rest? Does that still apply to us? And maybe how should that look for us?
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what I'm getting at. Thanks for saying that so concisely.
So I have a question. You asked the question, what is the role of Sabbath in modern day Christian's life? So my question is, what role did it play in the Old Testament follower of God's life?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Sorry. Hard left turn. I thought you were going somewhere else and I was about to go there too. So I'll wait a little bit on that.
Or what was the purpose? Or you said, you described it as a creation principle. But I mean, why did they practice it in the Old Testament?
Uh-huh. Okay. Gotcha. So that does actually tie in a little bit with what I was thinking. I thought it was interesting the way you worded the question as Christian's life, because the broad American culture by and large acknowledges weekends. Like a lot of people, uh-huh. like the normal work week is Monday through Friday, right? So a lot of people, except for maybe like outside, like, you know, service industry, would have some kind of like day off type of scenario, or like, you know, pretty much everybody knows that the weekend is more the time when you're not as likely to be working or whatever. It's kind of the general vibe. And so I was trying to think, like, how long has it been? Like, is that because of like Christian influence, or did, like, say Old Testament, like non-Jewish civilizations have a day off as well? Like, did they have a certain uh-huh. day that was off? I was just doing like a little bit of research, and kind of what I'm finding is that it was like the week itself was more established as a Jewish culture. Like there weren't weekends in the Roman culture until like Constantine, or until like the Jewish culture was more, or the Jewish Christian, whatever, it's more heavily involved. So since then is kind of where we've gotten our week outline.
Okay. Wow. So the week, are you saying the week as a way of keeping track of time is a Jewish thing, or was a Jewish thing?
I didn't have much time to actually research it, but that's kind of what I was reading. Huh. That's, I don't know. Well, I mean, okay, yeah, that up,
obviously,
but
that makes sense, because God instituted the week. Mm-hmm. We talk about creation week, I guess. Right. So that makes sense. But yeah. I guess I didn't think about it. That might not have been for pagan nations.
Yeah. And so that doesn't exactly pertain to Brad, so we can get back to that question. But something I was thinking about is, it's maybe somewhat a Christian value because of the fact that it's in the Bible and it was God that commanded it. So if you don't believe in the Bible or God, then you're not going to take that in consideration as much. But I think it could be, I would assume it's pretty widely accepted across the board that it's good for humans to have at least one day of like, not like, just from a productivity standpoint, to have some time off. So it is more of a creation principle that's built into our DNA, I would say, than just strictly like a Christianity thing.
Mm-hmm. But, uh-huh. Well, it's kind of, yeah, it's one of those things where it seems like science lines up with what, so God says we should have a day of rest and rejuvenation, and science seems to agree that that's a good idea, is kind of what I'm hearing anyway.
What science are you referring to? I don't disagree. Huh. I'm just curious.
I have no actual sources.
Uh-huh.
But
well, in that case, say whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm just going to make up stuff, you know what I mean? But no, I'm pretty sure one time I heard some study somewhere point to that. But
no, I think you're right.
It's like, why do we take lunch breaks?
Feel free to fact check me on that.
Why do kids take recess? Like, why do we take lunch breaks? Like, it's because it is actually a fact that your productivity goes down
right
if you're just like, going like day in and day out. And so, I mean, I haven't actually, kind of like Derek, I don't actually have facts to back it up on this one, but it seems like that could translate across to a broader break in your schedule, or in your work week, whatever, versus, you know, just little breaks throughout the day.
But yeah, so let's go back to Brad's question, which was, what role did it play in the Old Testament Jews' life? Is that what, what you said? Okay. So I'm gonna say what I've come across, and it's been very, it's not very well researched at all, but as I understand it, it would have been like a very important thing in their culture, and like would have had some rituals that would go along with it, family meal and some of that kind of stuff, and blessings and whatever. And it was, I think it was commanded partially as a commanded act of trust in God. Like basically, if you think about ancient civilization, you grow your own food or you trade for your needs, whatever. Like if you take a break one day, who knows what's going to tank. I mean, I don't know if they live that close on the edge or not, but I've gotten some of those vibes at least. And so to actually sit down and rest for a whole day is like saying, you know what, God, you're going to take care of me. So yeah, I guess fact check me on that too, if you want. that's my understanding of it, but I, what are you guys?
That I agree with both of those. It's kind of a rest principle, and also the trusting in God concept. That's actually something I hadn't really thought about much. I mean, I think I do in ways when I see people working on Sunday, but I tend to think of it just kind of as I'm doing something different than they are. And to be honest with you, in my situation, it's probably not as much a trust issue as it would have been way back. Because for them to stop their productiveness, as it were, was kind of was taking a break from what could have been better for them. So that idea of trusting God, I think, is a good I think it's a good part of Sabbath. There's one other thing that I thought of, and this is not comprehensive here at all, but I think it's a way of sacrifice. It's kind of maybe a tithe of our time, where we say, no, I will give this to God. And we can talk more about how that looks. And I think that's something that we should talk about.
And well, along with that, and that's kind of what I was thinking too. I was thinking that when, if you're giving up one day of a week that you could be doing, productive things, you know, leaving the cave and bringing back something for your family, so to speak, and you instead give that to God, you're saying you're trusting God to take care of you in the same way that tithing, you giving 10% is saying, I'm giving this back, I'm trusting you to make the 90% go far enough.
So one thing I'm realizing is that either I didn't ask the question very well, or it's like a way bigger question than I imagined. Because you guys are bringing up all kinds of stuff that I like didn't even think about. Wasn't even trying to go there, which I like. That's awesome. Go ahead, Brandon, and I want to say one more thing. They'll tie into this discussion.
Okay. Well, with the last comment, I'm gonna open up another can of worms. But like, you think about, obviously, back in like Jesus' time, the Sabbath was being abused because it was so legalistic. Like, you could only walk this certain distance, whatever, by the Jewish leaders. And so there's that approach where it's like super, super like day of rest, so much it's not a day of rest anymore type of situation.
Right.
And then there's, you know, a little bit more like, well, take off work, but you still go grocery shopping or whatever. Like, you still do some things like that. Like, I think there's quite a few people that would kind of fit into that category, kind of seeing it as like an errands day. And then there's like, obviously, full-fledged, like, you know, just working or doing your normal activities. So I'm kind of curious, like, we don't really need to try to nail this down, but what should go into our decisions of what we do on Sunday? Like, I know some people, don't like to do commerce or like go shopping or buy stuff as much or eat out as much as possible. They try to avoid that, kind of from a standpoint of that's making kind of making someone else work on their Sabbath. Is the actual day important? Like, I've heard of people that take it on Saturday or take it on another day of the week because Sundays are usually really busy for them or whatever. So I don't know, I'm just kind of interested in hearing more on that too.
Yeah, gotcha. So we've got a lot of questions on the table. Wow, I'm going to add another one. Or I don't know if it's – maybe it's not a question. Maybe it's just more of a background. So part of what why I want to talk about this is because I see a lot of people in our culture, kind of the more conservative Christian culture, that work really hard and go to church and maybe have a day of rest, but don't actually know that much about rest and how to rest and don't actually make it that much of a priority. And so, you know, maybe they, like you said, Brandon, maybe they don't go shopping or do their normal job, but there's a lot of activities that get packed into a Sunday and it can kind of get to be not a day of rest. And so I guess kind of my question with that is that as it ought to be? And if not, why? And how, you know, how do you go about having a healthy view of Sabbath or Sunday, which I know those are two different things, but they're kind of, we've kind of lumped them together, I guess. So anyway, lots of questions. I don't have no clue how to start unpacking it. But I think maybe let's go back to the historical thing. We talked about that a little bit, but let's go a little further with that. So we know kind of what the Jews would have done. But what about the early church? What was their practice like? Or because doesn't talk about in the New Testament some about like at some point they started gathering or bringing gifts on the first day of the week, right?
I think so. I think you're right on that, but I'm not for sure.
Yeah, they did switch, and boy, now this is why it's scary to be on a podcast because I'm going to say stuff that I don't know anything about, but yeah, I'm going to try just a little bit here.
We're all in this together.
Maybe they won't recognize my voice or something. Anyway, so I think it did switch, and I'm not 100% sure why. I do remember coming across something somewhere that for them to meet on Sundays was very counterculture because the Jews around them would have been observing Sabbath on Saturday. And so I don't know what kind of complications that caused for them or even how they observed it exactly, because in theory they should have been going to work. And so did they work the rest of the day? I don't know how this looked for them.
That is interesting.
But then obviously at some point it switched to, I mean, for at least most people, it switched to Sunday was the Christian day of rest. I wish I'd have more research on that, but I'm really wondering how it did look for the very early Christians.
Yeah.
Well, according to Wikipedia, which we all know is very reliable, according to some sources, Christians held corporate worship on Sunday in the first century. So it seems like it was pretty early on where it got switched to Sunday. But one of the big reasons for that would have been what we consider like communion, like breaking bread.
Right.
And fellowship, of course, is part of that.
Kind of a celebration of the resurrection too, right?
I believe so. It says, like, early Christians, at first mainly Jewish, observed the seventh day Sabbath with prayer and rest, but gathered on the first day, Sunday, reckoned in the Jewish tradition as beginning, like the other days, at sunset on what would now be considered the Saturday evening. So it sounds like they still observed the Jewish Sabbath of Saturday as a day of rest and worship, but then kind of Sunday was their, I don't know if we'd say resurrection day because it was the first of the week, which is interesting. Does that mean like we should all be just like taking off Monday?
We should go to a 4-day work week where we work Monday through Thursday and Friday is our like get projects done vacation day. Saturday is Sabbath and Sunday is the resurrection day.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Maybe one thing I've ran into, and we kind of went over this a little bit, all right, is like Sundays can feel really busy. Like sometimes Saturdays feel more relaxing. Like, okay, part of my relaxing is just like doing what I want to do. So that might mean I just, you know, go to town for a little bit, just do some light shopping or, you know, go wash my car and then come home and hang out with people for a bit and take a nap or whatever. Like to me, like that can be very relaxing, which is that it's not really stuff I necessarily do. I'm more likely to be doing that on a Saturday than a Sunday. But then Sundays, it's like you get up, you like study a Sunday school lesson. I teach a Sunday school class, so I teach Sunday school. You know, get dressed up, go to church, come home, like have a meal, and then like take a nap before you quickly, you know, go play sand volleyball, or, you know, maybe have the afternoon open. But then I pretty much always have like a youth activity in the evening. And so I'm curious, like, those are all good things, and I would hate to cut any of them out. But sometimes Saturday night I come in more feeling like, wow, tomorrow looks so busy.
Yeah, right.
Is that good, bad, neutral? Like, you know, something like church is really an important part of Sunday, I think. But I'm also curious to hear how, like, Brad, you preach on Sunday sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so how does that, like, especially, I've heard especially from pastors that they have to almost set another day aside to be able to actually get their day of rest. But I'm curious how that is for you.
Yeah, there's definitely aspects of that where you kind of miss the rest part, at least for the, like, my Sunday mornings are not restful when I'm preaching. There's no question about that.
Right.
The rest of the day, often it's quite restful. Like, I'm just out of it because of the
speaker's
time spent.
High.
Yeah. Well, or low as in falling asleep because I can't stay awake. Ooh, but
no.
Right.
I mean, there's aspects of that. You talked about Sunday school teaching or whatever. The stuff we pour into the service, which we obviously are agreeing that that's a good thing. It does take effort. And so, and I don't know, I'm not quite sure how to pair that with the rest idea. It does work well with the setting aside a day, for God or things of God. So maybe it's hitting part of that, but I'm not quite sure if we're doing the rest part of it very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
So how do we know if we're doing the rest part well? What does that look like?
Or what does real rest look like, maybe?
Yeah, or that. Because I feel like, I think part of what complicates it or makes it feel like a bigger question is your definition of rest and how much you prioritize rest. Because everybody has a little different definition, and everybody has a little different prioritization. Maybe that's overstated, but
I think
what are your thoughts on that, I guess?
I'm just going to throw something out here that I'm making up on the go, so correct me if I'm wrong. But I feel like there's a major difference between rest and inactivity because, I don't know, kind of workshopping this, but I can feel way more rested going and playing tennis with friends on an afternoon than I do laying on the couch, ending up watching YouTube, which is ultimately my fault. You know, like taking a nap or something like that can be good. But like, I think there's ways you can just like sit at home and leave Sunday feeling more drained than you did if you actually would have like done something.
Mm-hmm. And that and that varies from person to person too.
Yeah, right, for sure.
Exactly.
And even like, for at least for me, it varies depending on my mood or how much rest I've had previously.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Week to week or, you know, whatever. But I wonder if, here's another something I'm going to throw in here. Could rest also be substituted with the word play, or is that different? Because I'm hearing some themes of like, okay, like you said, talked about like playing tennis or something like that is more restful for you. Is that rest, or is that getting your mind into a play space where you are being rejuvenated and, just having a good time and your imagination is, I don't know. You're kind of de-stressing, I guess. Are rest and play in the same space? Are they different? Are they two halves of the same thing, or none of the above?
I think they kind of can go together. I think recreation can be relaxing, if you will, or it can be a way to rest. I'm a little unsure of how far to take that because, especially when you get very competitive or depending how wrapped up you are in something, I think it can tip over into something that's not restful.
Right.
But I'm not, I think in the past, or our spiritual heritage would have looked at recreation as something you don't do a lot of on Sunday. And I push back on that somewhat just because I think there can be value in it. Mm-hmm. But I also see, I guess I have some cautions about it that we don't just say, this is my day to just have fun, because it can very quickly become about me then.
Right.
And I don't think that's what it should be.
And depending how you go about that, it can pretty quickly become something in which energy is spent rather than rejuvenation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
something I thought of is what Jesus said about the Sabbath, and that was that the Sabbath was made for man and not the man for Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I'm not sure exactly how that ties into everything, but I think we do well to make so that it does work for us, or it's useful for us. Exactly.
Because that was part of the problem that he was running into, right? Is that it had become such a focus and such a legalistic thing that it was no longer serving them, or at least not fully, I guess.
Right.
The
focus was definitely the wrong place.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really interesting. Okay. Sorry. I'm a little tuned out here because I'm researching, but a lot of the like Old Testament verses that I typically think of associated with Sabbath basically say, don't work, labor for 6 days, and the seventh one is like holy or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I did find this passage in Deuteronomy that I honestly don't know if I've, Isaiah, that I don't know if I've actually heard before. It says, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. So that sounds a little bit more like what you were saying, Kristen, like rest being a bit more play. Like it sounds like honor it and do enjoyable things. It's kind of the tone that I take from that. But I don't know. Just curious if you guys have feedback on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this discussion, but I feel like for the sake of time, we need to shut it down soon. So how can we pull the thoughts together a little bit, or what are some of the central things we can all agree on, I guess, or things we've learned?
Well, it seems like we would all say that it's something worth observing. There's value in it.
Yeah, that's true. I guess none of us really said this is a bunch of hogwash. We
right.
should not do it.
I think we've all said that there isn't a particular way to observe it. I guess that this isn't going to help you wrap it up.
No, that's
okay.
Go ahead.
I struggle with the tension between saying this is a day set aside for God and then me doing things that I like to do in it. And I say that as a tension. I'm not even convinced it's a tension because I don't think God wants us to just sit around with long faces all day.
Right.
I don't think that glorifies God. So maybe it kind of goes hand in hand. But I also realize in myself that it's very easy to just do things I like, just focus on myself.
Right. Yeah.
And so I guess, I don't know, maybe holding those things in tension is a good way to do it, where we remember God, but enjoy the day or do things that rejuvenate
right.
us.
Maybe remember God by enjoying the day to some degree. Yeah. What I like what you said about focus. It seemed like that's something that's been a recurring theme, is where the focus is, whether it's selfish or on God or on getting it right or whatever it may be.
And I think part of that, Brad, is going with what you were saying, that's why I do like having church as a fixture that's in the morning, that kind of starts it off on that note of having it God's day. Because, I wouldn't say, sometimes there are definitely times when people like need a break and maybe Sunday church service isn't the best thing for them at that point, but having that as kind of the usual kind of creates that preface to the rest of the day.
Okay, well, I think that's going to be it for this segment of Open for Debate. Okay, so the next segment that we're going to do is called Kind of Spicy, and it's going to be a recurring segment on this podcast, and it is basically our Share Interesting Things segment, where everybody brings a little something that is kind of spicy. So, Derek, I think you consented to go first. What do you have for us?
Okay. So, hopefully, this does not bore anybody, but I can make
That's
it
That's not a good sign, Derek.
We can, oh, man. They can't see us, so if we're sleeping, they can't tell.
You can't get that disclaimer, because I was going to give that about mine. But
okay. Well, okay.
We'll give it a shot here.
Okay. So, just listen, and I'll tell you something. All right, so I don't know if you've ever watched or if you've ever seen how in the most fields, the lines going through the field, the rows of the crop are super straight. And that is because we as farmers typically will use a GPS guidance system on our tractors and combines and sprayers and everything that goes through the field. And you might think, well, that's just a luxury item and you can just kind of sit back and not have to steer. Well, that's actually couldn't be further from the truth. But the truth is actually we...
Wait, you steer the GPS?
Well, no.
Oh, okay.
The
not
fact,
that kind of truth.
Oh, okay. The fact that it... The fact that it's not a luxury item.
Oh,
is,
that, gotcha.
That is true.
Yeah.
It is not a luxury item. It is, well, it could be perceived that way, but it really isn't.
Sorry, I didn't mean to...
It is a value-added item, and... You so if the tractor steers itself going across the field, that gives me as the operator time to turn around, look at the implement going through the ground. I can pay attention to my monitors and make sure everything is functioning as it should, and allows me to focus on making sure the machine is doing what I want it to instead of having to focus on just steering straight.
Gotcha. So you can kind of up your efficiency and such that way.
Yeah. Or... And, yes. So, and all, yeah, that's another thing. So efficiency, so I'm not overlapping on my last pass at all.
Uh-huh.
We're making an even 30-foot pass. We're not overlapping and we're not making skips.
Yeah.
So gotcha. That, so we're making, being more efficient that way. We're also doing a better job because I can pay better attention to the things that really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, it's not just for steering. It's actually, we use the GPS map that we're creating. We're creating a coverage map, so it is painting in a map as we apply, as we do what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're applying seed or chemical, fertilizer, whatever we're putting in the ground, on the ground, whatever, it will shut our machine off sectionally, like one section at a time, so that we're not double planting an area. We're using less seed than we would if we over applied. So we're saving money that way. Also, we're actually can bump our yields because overpopulating your seed or over fertilizing an area is actually just about as bad as under applying fertilizer or under applying seed or doubling up on your certain chemicals in this area when you spray, because like doubling the rate on a certain chemical, it can actually have dire effects on your crop. So,
gotcha. Too much of a good thing.
So, can I insert something here?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I tend to think of, you know, a tractor being similar to mowing or something like that, because that's what the closest thing I have to compare it to. But, like, when you're mowing, you're only really focusing on whether you're, you know, making straight lines or not. But you're saying that it's a little bit more like trying to focus, like, trying to see what the, you know, input is of your bagger and all that. You have these other things to focus on, so taking the straightness of your lines out of play allows you to get some of the more fine points correct.
Exactly. Yep. That's a big part of it. Yep.
So it, go ahead.
It controls more than just the steering.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, okay. It controls more than just the steering. We have it's called section control. So it can turn on and off, let's say I'm planting corn. It can turn it can turn individual rows of the planter on and off as I enter an area that still needs to be planted, exiting an area that's already been planted, or vice versa.
Gotcha. Okay.
Exiting the part that needs to be planted into an area that has been planted.
Basically, there's like essentially no waste.
Right. There's less waste, and
So
yeah,
what you're saying is, if you're in some little corner of a field or something like that, and then you had to drive through a section that's already planted, it'll just automatically shut off when you go back through the planted area?
Exactly.
Oh, wow. That's pretty dope.
Wow.
That's pretty neat.
Does your mower do that?
No.
You just step up your mower game.
But, you know, when you're mowing, like, you should be concerned about the quality of cut, so you're controlling your speed. And, like, if your blades are getting too dull, you'd be looking for your grass to get, like, these...
Like the splintered
ends. Instead of a clean cut.
Right.
But, That's just me.
If the grass is cut, the job's done.
Yeah, I know, right?
I guess so. Control manager, Brandon.
I'm not throwing you under the bus, but I'm just saying there can be more to mowing than just
that's fair.
Just getting across.
My number one speed control is whether the chute is clogging or not.
Oh my goodness! Wow,
it's too early in the morning and it's still wet.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Okay, well, Brandon, I think you're next. What do you have?
Okay, so also please don't just like tap out and get boring, but. How many of you know what Dogecoin is? I'm familiar with this.
Define no.
I know that it's a cryptocurrency.
Okay, yeah, you know that.
I was going to guess it was a cryptocurrency.
That's about all I know. Okay.
So, my question...
You might need to describe cryptocurrency to me again, though, too.
But I do... Well, that would be good. And I would just like to thank you right off the bat for helping me know how to pronounce it. That was one of my things that I didn't know.
Now I'm wondering how it's spelled. I'm not sure if I've seen
it. Dogecoin.
Oh, dear.
All one word. So Doge, like
thank you for helping me know how to pronounce it, too.
Okay. Good. Okay. So basically, this isn't really about Dogecoin, so don't just tap out if you're not into investing as much as I am or that kind of thing. So Dogecoin is a cryptocurrency, and for those who aren't super familiar with cryptocurrency, basically it's a digital... Okay, I don't even understand it that well. Basically, a digital currency, or like an algorithm type of thing, that is assigned value, and it gets its value from demand. So, for example, Bitcoin is the popular one. There's a finite number of Bitcoin, so Bitcoin has value because people, you know, once you have one Bitcoin, then you own that, and that's one out of however many, and that's how it gets value, because you can sell it to someone else for more than that. But the interesting part about Dogecoin is that it's actually was created as a joke. So it literally, Doge is, I don't really know the whole roots of the meme, but it was created way back in 2013. So it's not actually new. But it was created as based on a meme. They call it meme coin as well. It's kind of another name for it. Wow. It has a popular dog as kind of its like mascot or whatever. So this dude literally just created this as a joke.
Wow.
But then it kind of took off from there. And originally it started out, I'm not sure how cheap it was, but it's been less than a cent all the way up until this year is how much one Dogecoin is. So you can buy Dogecoin like dirt cheap.
Oh.
So the beginning of this year, things kind of started picking up a little bit on the Dogecoin scene. And in the past year, anyone would guess how much Dogecoin's value has increased?
Like percentage or?
Percentage-wise, yeah.
I'm going to say...
Because it's still less than a dollar because, you know, percentage-wise, it's still huge.
Wait, you said it used to be...
Less than a cent?
Yeah. I'm going to say like...
Beginning of the year, it was like eight tenths of a cent.
I'm going to say it was like about a 700% increase.
Okay. Past year. So, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either, but we'll go with 500% because I want to say something.
Okay, go ahead, Derek. What do you got?
I don't know.
No, it's more. It's 1,000%.
It's got to be, I know.
It's more than that.
I understand.
Well, you said it's less than a... Wait. Well, less than a dollar, wouldn't that... Okay, wait. I don't know.
Math.
We don't have time for math.
I'm sorry. I got nothing.
Okay. So we're looking at 19,000%.
Oh, my.
19,719.26% over the past year.
So it's now worth how much?
Okay. So that's the important part. So just this week, it went above 40 cents for the first time ever. Like it's hitting like record-breaking territory.
Wow.
For context, according to an article on Yahoo Finance, if you had placed a $1,000 order for the cryptocurrency, just the beginning of this year, so we're talking January, the beginning of this year, and you would have sold it at today's high of 43 cents, you would now have $80,000.
So we're going, good.
Wow.
So sure. Just in the
I wish my jokes were that prosperous.
Yeah, no,
profitable.
just in the past month, it's gone up. The past 3 months, it's gone up basically 4,000%. Past week, it's gone up 500%. Okay, so those are kind of like the... not really the point of why I'm talking about this. The interesting thing about it is the only reason it's going up is literally just Twitter and Reddit hype. It's kind of reminiscent of GameStop, which I'm pretty sure a lot of you have heard about. But basically, a popular cryptocurrency trading site, just went public on the NASDAQ, so they're getting listed publicly, so that's bringing more attention to cryptocurrency. And also, mostly Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, tweeted about it. That's the main thing. And so everyone piles on, and then it just goes up. The question I have, or kind of thing I want to hear your take on, is how should finance work, I guess, in some ways, in an age where literally just a tweet from someone can majorly manipulate the markets? Because one of my concern is Elon Musk owns Dogecoin. So is it really fair, or I don't know if this is even if you can even regulate it, but some people are saying that it should be regulated how these people can manipulate the markets. Because if he can buy a whole bunch of Dogecoin and then just tweet about it, and all of a sudden it spikes like crazy, is that really fair to the rest of everyone else? So I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, see, there used to be this thing called gold that like had intrinsic value. It wasn't driven. I mean, it's partially driven. I guess it was driven by demand too. But it was valuable, like a useful thing.
True.
I guess depends.
Well, yeah, we use it a lot in like electronics and stuff, so it's valuable in that way. Like it really does do some good.
Yeah.
But its value goes beyond that, right? I mean, would it be worth what it is if it was only in the as a substance material? What
like
do I you're want saying, here?
Like iron or like rock or like what do you
mean? Yeah. Okay. But anyway, we're getting off.
The only thing, the only difference between like iron and gold is that it has a nice shimmery color to it, and it also conducts electricity better. But I mean,
there's less of it in the world.
Yeah, see, yeah. Okay, that's Brad's getting to what I really wanted to focus on, is the interesting thing about this whole deal, to me, this is what I find interesting, is so far as what we're familiar with, we assign value based on scarcity. So, you know, if someone buys a rare painting, we all know that it's not because Mona Lisa looks really good. It's because that is, I mean, okay, whatever.
Depends who you ask, but yeah.
Fine. But like a lot of it is because of the rarity of what you're buying. So gold and diamonds, you know, they look cool, but there's also like they're hard to get. And so that's why they have value. Mm-hmm. The thing that's interesting about Dogecoin is that every minute, 10,000 new Dogecoin are released for affinity. So it is actually programmed to where over time, it should just get completely worthless. Like it's similar to the Fed just printing money off of nothing, which would never happen, but I mean it does kind of,
you know.
You never know.
But so that's why I find this so fascinating, is because we have always attached value based on like, you know, the scarcity of something, but now all of a sudden it's like kind of this nebulous I don't know, like people have like there's tweets and stuff, people who literally have like made $1 million on this because they had so much back when it was like worthless. And so it kind of seems like it rewrites the rules a little bit of how we value stuff.
Yeah. Okay. But I think the rules are rewritten until they're not. Like, I think at some point it will be like back to what you're saying about things being valuable because of scarcity or because of, what they do for us rather than just a flash in the pan kind of thing. I mean,
true. And I mean, yeah, because I'm going to be honest, this does sound like a little bit of a flash in the pan, but then again, I mean, a lot of people stand to make a lot of money, and a lot of people stand to lose a lot of money on it, so it can affect a lot of people, too, so I don't know.
That's true.
It's kind of a fake thing that brings real-life ramifications, which is why I find some of the conversation about, like, why, you know, is this actually okay for people of high influence to be manipulated, partly because they're the ones who actually know what they're doing that stand to gain the most from it. I don't know. I mean, you could just kind of say that people that don't know what they're doing, that's kind of on them, and so they kind lose. Of, but
you're saying kind of the rich get richer kind of thing.
See, that's what I'm curious. Do you think does it play out that way? Because like, okay, for me, I'm not to brag, I had Dogecoin when it was at 6 cents. So now, like, I mean, I didn't make a lot of money because I didn't have very much of it. But, like, for me, it's like, oh, great, this went up, and then I, like, make a couple bucks, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, in some ways, with how accessible stuff like this is now through, like, Robinhood and Webull and whatever, in some ways, it kind of opens that up to the, like, middle class and lower class people to have access to it in a new way, but it also gives a whole new realm of getting pulled into someone else's scam too.
Yeah, gotcha.
That that kind of goes to what I was thinking of, and I don't want to get into this. Maybe we can talk about it the next time. But who is giving Elon Musk power? And it's essentially anyone that's buying into this. And so you can argue that, I mean, yes, he's maybe manipulating to a degree, but there are other people that are giving him the power to do that. So anyway, but it's interesting thing to think about.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of that's a little bit along the lines of what I was thinking too, is kind of, you know, I mean, I know a lot of places don't have the opportunity that we do here in America, but like, it is a free country, and anybody is free to work really hard, and I believe just about anybody could get to where Elon Musk is if they, not quite that, but they can work their way up and get to that status to where a lot of people would listen to you. A lot of people have a good reason to choose not to get that far, like, but anyways.
Not everything is equal in the opportunity world, but you're right, there's a pretty broad
range. And just to kind of summarize like some of this, that's probably why, kind of what Derek said, that's probably why I'm excited to see things. I mean, you can think what you want about Robinhood or things like that, but I'm excited to see some of that being more accessible, because it used to be the only way you could really like hit it rich was like the lottery or Wall Street. Like now, you basically have a way, people can actually make smart decisions if they have the education well informed, to where they can help not pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but they can actually have a viable way of making some money and getting out of poverty cycles. But yeah, I was reading an article that was interviewing like more of a hedge fund investor, which doesn't really matter, but basically someone who does this professionally for a living. He's a big wig in the world. And he was like very mad at Elon Musk and whatever, probably because his hedge fund hadn't done well at the beginning of this year and stuff. But I think that is, I would rather side with Elon Musk in at least letting the little kids, I guess, have some fun and have their shot at it, instead of just the big companies that would rather keep everything closed up. Yeah. So that's what I have.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I guess it's my turn. So, yeah, I guess I could give my little boring disclosure too. But this is something that I learned about in the last couple of months that I thought was really fascinating. So it's a rare brain disease called Roifman syndrome. So just to give you a quick little review of your brain and what it's like, this is just an interesting fact that I came across while I was researching, but your brain is 2% of your body weight, but it uses 20% of your body's energy, which I thought was pretty fascinating. And your brain is divided in half, essentially. I mean, yeah, has two hemispheres, left and right. And in general, the right hemisphere is responsible for control of the left side of your body and is more artistic and creative. The left hemisphere is responsible for control of the right side of the body and is more academic and logical. So that's just kind of a quick little overview of the brain. So Roifman syndrome, there are like around 50 cases worldwide. So that's how rare it is. 50 known cases, but I think they're still like thinking maybe it more common than what they discovered. They're still actively researching. Reifman is one of the doctor's names, and I think he's still alive. So characteristics that often go along with Roifman syndrome are growth retardation, cognitive delay, antibody deficiency, and something I can barely pronounce, but I'm going to try. Spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia. Sorry, that was awful, but I'm going to call it SED. That's what their abbreviation is. It's much easier. So I did not know what that was, and I assume you don't either. So I will tell you, SED is a rare genetic disorder that results in short stature and skeletal anomalies. I'm sorry. I am not used to the medical field.
And you said you were tired before we started.
I am tired, yes. But it is a form of dwarfism. So basically, it affects the spine and long bones of the arms and legs. So that's another, that's one of the symptoms, characteristics of Roifman. So often something that goes along with Roifman syndrome is dysgenesis or agenesis of the corpus callosum, which I don't know if you know what that is, but I didn't either. So I had to look it up. So the corpus callosum is basically the bundle of nerves connecting the left and right sides of the brain. And so agenesis would be like it's just not present, and dysgenesis would be it's present, but it's only partially there. So basically, the left and right sides of the brain have limited or no communication. And so what that means in the case of Roifman syndrome, so one of my coworkers has, I think it's three of his children have this. It's a very, it's a rare thing, but he somehow happened, it's a genetic disorder. And it's a recessive trait, but it can be, you know, it can come out if the right genes are present. So one of his daughters has 10% of her corpus callosum, and some of her symptoms are that she takes everything literally, so she doesn't get sarcasm. The combination of the logical and the intuitive is like she doesn't understand. She also has trouble with her voice being like an even tone. It like voice inflections are hard for her. So
you're saying she leans towards having a very monotone voice.
Right. Okay. Right. Oh, exactly. Okay. And she's had a number of other health issues. I think the antibody deficiency is something she has. I kind of forget. And I don't think she has either of these, but heart problems are pretty stereotypical for Roifman syndrome, and eye problems are also pretty stereotypical. So, it's kind of this fascinating collection of symptoms. I think he has two daughters and a son. One of his daughters is very high functioning. The other one is pretty high functioning. If you like, when I've been around, haven't interacted with her much at all. But when I've been around her, she seems like very high functioning. One thing they said can go along with the agenesis or dysgenesis of the corpus callosum is either an enlarged head or a really small head. Mm. And I think she has a little bit larger head if I recall.
Can I ask a question? Like what, you said it's genetic, but like what causes it? Is it just like something wrong with the genes? Like is it a birth defect kind of thing? Or like,
yeah, I mean, it'd be a birth, yeah, something you're born with.
So it's just like you don't form correctly.
Right, I mean, your recessive, if you have both recessive genes present, then it would be manifested, I guess. I don't quite understand all of that, but...
So if you're born with something and you're one of only 50 people in the world that had it, is that automatically cool or automatically the worst ever?
You should ask her, I guess, or ask one of the three of them.
Wow. Are there...
I think it's kind of both, because they've had some... it does make some complications, but it's also kind of interesting and cool.
Yeah. Are there any therapies, medications, treatments of any kind that are available for this, or what's the...
I'm not totally sure. I haven't researched that much. I mean, I know they're still working on it. I think she would, like... I think there would have been some... Like, he's talked about his son getting some therapy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of his daughters, maybe both, have had, like, numerous doctor visits, and, like, yeah, they've been working towards treating symptoms and stuff.
The son's the youngest, right?
I think,
so he'd be like the most, like, I mean, maybe recent as far as how far stuff has come, as far as treatment and that kind of thing.
I think they have like different symptoms among the three of them too. Like, I don't think they're all quite the same set of symptoms either.
Interesting.
So. I will say it is interesting. Like, I mean, I would have met them some like company parties and that kind of thing. Like, they seem like almost... normal, but then there's just a couple that kind of like what you said about not getting sarcasm. Mm-hmm. Like, some of those things make sense because I don't know, it almost could come across as just like socially awkward, but you can kind of tell there's something a little bit more than that. But yeah, they seem pretty normal. Right. Like, if you just see them out in town or whatever, I don't know if you'd really like know that they're not like with it or whatever.
Wow.
I mean, not that they're not with it, but just that they're not
to greater degree
normal, normal health wise,
right. Yeah, anyway, so that's what I have.
Yeah, this kind of fascinates me because, especially when you talked about the not getting sarcasm, it's like, so, I mean, there are things that people, there are ways that we interact that, like, you get what's going on. And but then sometimes some people don't, and it makes me wonder, is it like, I often look at that person and say, well, you know, what's wrong with them? But maybe there's a chance that there's more physical things wrong with people, I mean, that we just don't know. I mean, maybe their brain is formed a little bit differently and it just makes it hard to make those connections or whatever. Obviously, this is a very specific disorder that does make those things, and they know about it. And maybe it is more the way we were raised, or, you know, different ways we pick up social cues. But I think autism has taught us some things about that. There are just things that are harder for some people than others.
And it's kind of a new concept to me. Really, I find it really interesting to think that a certain like physical thing in your mind not being normal makes something as like mental and social as sarcasm not work the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
That's a new thought to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking here, researching a little bit. On this site, says that agenesis or dysgenesis of the corpus callosum affects around 1 in 4,000 people. So that's not super common, but you've probably met somebody before.
Okay,
interesting.
That actually had that. I mean, I'm sure there's other people that don't get sarcasm that don't have that, but yeah.
So is it like too connected if you use too much sarcasm?
No, I think that's just a cynicism problem.
You know, that reminds me, the reason I asked if there was therapies and things, you know, that you can do, I guess, I think there was a guy one time who had a serious accident, and some of the connections between the two halves of his brain were disconnected, and somehow they eventually grew back, some of them, to some degree. So I don't know if there was... That's what made me curious about that. I have no idea. I don't know much about this. But yeah, that was just...
That would be strange if, like, in your adult life, your brain, like, you wouldn't be able to do certain things, and then it would, like, heal to where you could do
things. I wouldn't be surprised if you could do therapy that would do that kind of thing. But I don't... Yeah, I haven't researched it enough to know. But yeah, so Brad, what do you have?
All right, so this segment is called what?
Kind of spicy. Okay.
So my thing is not kind of spicy at all. There's no spice at all. I want to talk about Peeps. And I don't know how you feel about Peeps.
Are you talking about marshmallow?
The marshmallow trees.
The marshmallow little doodads.
Stop making me hungry
about Peeps. So
save your opinions on Peeps for the end of this. I want to ask you then. But I want to give you some facts about Peeps.
Are any of these facts going to make me guilty when I eat Peeps?
Yeah, probably one of them will for sure.
Carry on.
So first of all, I do want to shout out Phil Vischer and the Holy Post podcast, because he talked about Peeps on there. So I did some research as well. Well, first, let's just ask a question. On average, how many Peeps do you think are made each day? And this is an average. So like, it's not like
throughout the year.
Yes.
Okay, can I ask a question first?
Go.
Like, are Peeps used for anything other than Easter?
I was wondering, are they?
Okay, that's a
year?
Good question. They actually
affects my guess.
Yes, they actually are used for other holidays. I think Halloween, if you can call that a holiday, and Christmas, maybe some others as well. But yeah, so it's not just Easter.
Well, I have no idea how many
Peeps are made.
So number of individual Peeps per day on average.
Yeah,
I have no, like, I've actually never had them, so I don't really know how much people eat at a time. Or I have no idea. So
well, I'm glad we're helping to inform you.
Eat in a package, right?
Here for Bart over here. They're the kind of thing where you either eat one and then you're good, like that's all you need, or else you're probably gonna eat like a whole tray of them.
Yeah, like they come in strips of four, right?
Think so.
And there's two strips in a package, and if you can keep from eating at least one strip, you're doing pretty good. Depending who you are.
Yeah, it depends who you are.
Okay, I have no idea. I mean,
depends on the kind of Peep too.
That's true.
I'm all ears. Flavors.
I'm just gonna guess like the 20,000.
Okay, you're both low. It's actually on average. This is probably not every day of the year, but 5.5 million.
What?
Yes.
What?
This is why America has diabetes.
Oh my goodness!
Exactly, literally, yes. That is disgusting.
So yeah, and I was gonna come down here. Okay, it is apparently the favorite non-chocolate Easter candy. There are more than 1.5 billion sold each spring.
Wow. Okay, that's not too surprising, though, because they're pretty, like, standard issue Easter candy. It's
pretty, yeah,
I mean, it's okay, think of non-chocolate Easter candies. You basically got that or jelly beans, right?
Pretty much.
Or what else is there?
Okay, corn candy gets such a bad rap at Halloween and in the fall. If you like Peeps, I don't want to hear it.
Because exactly, exactly.
I think those are kind of the corn candy of Easter, and they're not great.
Okay, so moving on here. How long do you think it takes to make a Peep? That's a random question. You probably don't think about how long it takes to make candy. I never did before, but...
Okay, so a couple seconds, maybe?
Derek, do you know what Peeps like? Can you visualize what a Peep is? Or you just...
I mean, it's like a marshmallowy thing in the shape of a little chick.
Yes. It's like a marshmallow.
It's about, I have no idea what a statue
what are they like. It's like a shaped marshmallow with sugar and coloring.
Like, can you get them in different sizes or are they all the same?
They're pretty much the same, I think. You can get them in different colors and flavors.
There's a standard issue, but you can get different animals. I think they did make some minis, maybe.
Oh, they make those rabbit.
But those are still the same size.
Yeah, I think they're basically small ones, but yeah.
It takes like 3 seconds to make a Peep.
Okay, so... It's 6 minutes. I don't get this.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are they like baking them?
But I don't understand this, guys. I do not understand this. In 1953, it took 27 hours
to make a Peep?
Yes. I don't understand the process.
19 what?
Oh, wait.
I didn't do that much research.
You know, that reminds me. I think I did watch a video on how they're made once.
Did they hand sculpture each one?
Now that,
or what?
Well, it was like basically they like squirt them out with a... I don't know, syringe type thing.
It looks like one of those things that you would just have a machine that just squirts like some marshmallow thing, you know, like kind of a weird little curly thing, and it just dries in the shape of the... Right. You just put sugar on it and eyes.
But isn't the time involved before they squirt it?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the process is. Okay. But anyway, so... But obviously, they improved it drastically.
I bet they, like, had to... roast marshmallows over a fire, pull off the outer shell and use the insides.
Oh my goodness.
And put it in the sleeve thing and squirt it out in the shape of a Peep. Oh, that's probably why it took so long.
I'm over here trying to figure out, like,
okay,
if you said 6 minutes to a Peep, right?
Yeah.
And you said 1.5 billion per Easter.
Yeah.
So you're trying to figure out how big the machine is?
No, I'm trying to figure out how long it takes, like, per Peep to, like, make them a Peeps. But my calculator won't go past 150 million, so I can't.
I'm just trying to figure out where this is all going. I have no idea.
Well, I don't know where it's going either.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just kind of spicy.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so a couple more things here. I'll just tell you what they're made of, and that will probably be what will make you feel guilty for eating Peeps. Okay. It's a boiling batch of granulated sugar. Beautiful. And then there's sugar and corn syrup.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's gelatin and vanilla extract that are added later.
Mm. Oh.
So, you know.
Vanilla, interesting.
Yeah.
What I want to know, like, do you have any, like, nutrition facts? Like, how many calories are for, like, a whole
strip
of them?
It's actually not that bad.
I was wondering, because they're mostly air, right?
I don't have it right in front of me. Brandon can maybe look it up. But it was, I think the Holy Post podcast was talking about it. It was actually not, I think a whole strip is maybe a serving.
I kind of think that's
true. And so was not as bad as I thought, maybe.
It's probably a little bit like cotton candy. It's sugar-coated air.
Right, exactly. It's like, it's really sweet, but there's a lot of air in there,
slightly
too.
More dense than cotton candy, but still.
Yeah.
Okay,
If you search "Are Peeps bad for you" on Google, the first post that comes up is one that says why you should never eat Peeps. 11 reasons. Why?
And oh my!
Reasons such as, you know, the texture is horrendous.
Oh,
great. Eating Peeps is a sugar overdose waiting to happen. They dye your fingers, so there's a lot.
These
going
are all
on.
Really lame.
Like, come on, man!
Peeps are totally inferior to all other Easter candy.
I mean, apparently, lots of people don't think that.
Apparently.
I have no idea, but they can't be that bad.
We are going to have Peeps on the next recording.
I so badly wanted to have some, but I'm not sure how easily they are to get at this time of year. Yeah. Like, we just passed Easter.
Well, I mean,
Easter,
Bart needs to try some, so.
Well, this is true. I wanted so badly to pass them out tonight. I'm sorry, guys. That's failed.
Okay. And I haven't even had any this Easter season for some reason. I just didn't get around to it, I guess.
Okay, I'm getting the donut. I mean, sorry. I'm trying to compare them to donuts just to put it in something we can handle here.
Gotcha.
So the average donut, this is actually really gross. The average donut has 11 grams of sugar, right?
Okay.
We should be fair. Donuts are more greasy than sugary. But a donut with chocolate. Okay. A medium donut with chocolate has 11 grams of sugar.
Okay.
If you eat, let's see here. if you eat 5 Peeps, which is a serving size, it's 34 grams of sugar. So you could eat 3 donuts to about 5 Peeps.
Okay, but that's would you say 35 grams? That's still less than a can of Mountain Dew, isn't it? Isn't a can of Pop usually like 40-something?
I don't remember, but it's high.
You can check that on Google, too.
So donuts aren't that bad for you, then? Is that what we're
right.
learning from this? But don't eat chocolate-covered donuts.
Health is relative, Derek.
Yeah, you could.
Or no. Why not?
We're getting weird looks from Brandon right now. Our producer. We need to give our producer a mic and
I know
let him say his opinions on chocolate-covered donuts.
Doing the do will cost you 46 grams of sugar.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is about 3.8 tablespoons worth.
Oh, yeah. Gross. So basically, like...
Okay, compare that to Mellow Yellow, because it's better.
Okay, but still, if you think about it, that means 5 Peeps, like basically eating like 6 or 7 Peeps is like 4 tablespoons of sugar, which kind of feels like a lot.
Whoa!
Wait, what?
I'm just saying rough math. Okay, I'm just saying rough math.
How many tablespoons was the pop?
Okay, so the pop is 46 grams of sugar for a total of 3.8 tablespoons, right?
Okay.
All right.
Peeps are 5 per 34.
So it's like 3 tablespoons, right? Is that what you said earlier?
Let's 30, see. If you take 34 divided 34? By 5.
Math.
Grams. Yeah, it's too late to be doing math.
Okay, 6.8. So 46 divided by 6.8. 46 divided by 6.8 equals 6.7 Peeps is the same amount of sugar as a Mountain Dew.
So eat Peeps and donuts all you want, basically, is what we're saying.
Really?
Oh, my.
Okay.
Well, that was good. Are you done?
Yeah,
with your, go ahead.
I'm almost done here. Okay, I don't know if there's any... I just want to talk about the eyes of the Peeps. I've never
What is it?
Thought about the eyes of the Peeps, but...
they probably have a bunch of flies can poop on them.
It is actually wax.
What?
Wait, so
literally wax.
I thought maybe
oh,
they were
crud.
Just...
Now I'm the one that can't pronounce a word. Carnauba?
Oh, I'm not alone.
A non-toxic edible wax. That is also found in some shoe polishes and car waxes.
Carnauba?
Plus many other candies. So Carnauba? It's, yeah, anyway.
Know.
Something like that.
It's one of those words you look at and don't
isn't
know.
It weird? Isn't it weird how many candies are actually a little waxy? Yeah. Like, I think there's probably a lot more candies than you think that have some wax in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the thing that's put on last. So.
Wow.
Okay, but I would just like to get... To wrap this up, I'd like to get your opinion. Derek, you don't have an opinion, apparently. You just have to go on looks. Do you think they look good? Like, good to
Do you know
eat?
What they look like, maybe?
I would pop them, yeah.
Okay,
definitely.
Sure.
Like, oh, that looks kind of
so,
yellow.
It looks like mellow yellow.
Not to go too deep, but is your family just, I mean, doesn't believe in them? Or, you know, what caused the lack of Peeps in your life?
Believe in them is the right word, because I think their Peeps are a bit of a religion sometimes.
Yeah, probably. I honestly don't know. Like, okay, I don't go to town and just buy candy a lot.
Uh-huh.
So when I get candy, it's kind of whatever people give me, or sometimes I do buy candy, but...
And apparently your Peeps don't give you Peeps, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was like,
you're
you
right.
Need some more people in your life.
Yeah, it's not a thing in our family. We literally don't ever have them. Like, if somebody would give us some, we would definitely eat them, but
wow,
we just never... I don't think any of our... Like, I think maybe the rest of my family is like... I don't even know if they're good or not, so
bother?
Yeah. I'm going to buy something I know is good.
Yeah,
that's a good call.
I'll give you that. They do look like one of those candies that's like a real gamble. If you see it in the store, it's like, what is that? If you've never had it, it's like, this could be good or it could just kind of be
Give me blue raspberry or give me none of them, because the yellow ones leave a weird aftertaste in your mouth.
I'll take the yellow ones. You can have the blue
the
raspberry.
The blue raspberry... I just discovered like a couple years ago, and they are fantastic. So I'll take the blue raspberry.
Okay, so you're in on Peeps at certain flavor,
not original. Like to me, the original just leaves this weird, like really fake taste in your mouth.
Original is where it's at.
Like,
I think
it's like I would rather just eat a marshmallow than eat that. And so, but the blue raspberry ones, like the blue raspberry flavor, kind of masks it, and that's actually really good.
Okay,
yeah.
And you are in on the yellows.
Yeah, I like the original ones. I think blue raspberry is okay too. I don't think I was a big fan of the watermelon.
Ooh. Okay,
and they have other flavors besides those three.
Quick
too,
question:
don't they?
What is the original flavor?
Nobody knows.
Yellow.
It's like just like a really really soft plushy marshmallow with a little bit of sugar and 2 wax eyes.
So it's not artificial banana or anything weird like that.
No.
Okay, thank goodness. Because artificial banana can get out leave. Of
here. We'll save that for another podcast.
I know. We don't have time to go into that argument.
So my take on them, actually, I haven't eaten them for so long that I hardly know what my take is, but that will tell you a little bit where I'm at. They're not worth it for me.
They're not.
They're just not worth the bother. Like, if I can give me some jelly beans or especially chocolate, that would be much better.
Mm. And, so you're if you have to do non-chocolate Easter candy, you're siding with jelly beans.
Oh, easily.
Okay.
Give me some Jolly Rancher jelly beans any day. Those are amazing.
That does sound pretty good.
Okay, not gonna lie.
So more or less on the worthless side, and just I don't even like marshmallows that well, but I'd probably just go with a regular marshmallow if I had.
So here's another plot twist. I've never done this, but I've heard that some people like to roast Peeps over the fire. Like,
I was just going to ask that if that's kind of their thing.
Okay. That's how they do roasted marshmallows.
That was one of the facts of why you should never eat Peeps, is because someone was saying you can't roast them. They don't roast
Why
well.
Not?
Well, I don't know. My friends just proved them wrong.
I have a couple little backup notes things. First of all, no one knows what flavor yellow is. There's literally not an answer. It's just original. It doesn't have flavor.
It's marshmallow.
Also, Peeps flavors do include Peeps Delights, Fruit Punch, Pumpkin Spice, Cotton Candy, Sour Watermelon, Bubble Gum, Party Cake, Red Velvet, Pancakes and Syrup, Caramel Apple, Sweet Lemonade, Mystery, and I think I saw a coconut on there somewhere, as well as a sugar cookie.
Wow. So there's two mystery flavors. One is mystery and one is original. Also, and there's apparently a chocolate because red velvet is chocolate, right?
That's like cake.
That's like a cake flavor, isn't it?
What?
But isn't it a chocolate cake?
I thought red velvet cake was a chocolate cake that is decidedly red.
We're officially way off the rails on this one.
I don't know. When you go through the flavors like that, it makes it sound like something only second graders in Milo should eat.
Yes. Amen.
We should be insecure over here.
No, dude, red velvet cake is chocolate cake. End of story.
We'll talk about that in another podcast. Maybe.
Keep it down,
Dan. I forgot one thing. Sorry. So we'll touch on this before I close. I was trying to figure out where I was going with that. So, ironically, Peeps are not actually... Okay, so Just Born, the company, makes Peeps. Peeps are not their best-selling candy.
Oh.
So what do you think is?
Okay, hold up. Is it holiday-specific?
No.
What was the company
So this
again?
Company, Just Born. Born, this company does not make that many candies, actually.
Well, it sounds like they're kind of
They make a
it.
Lot of candies, but different
candy?
Ones. They make what?
Do they make corn candy?
They don't.
Okay, hold on.
That I know of.
Okay, I need some clues. So first of all, is it a hard or soft candy or gummy?
Gummy-ish. Gummy. Yeah.
Is it like a seasonal candy or year-round?
No, it's year-round.
Is it gummy bears?
No.
Oh, that's what I was gonna guess too.
What's a company?
Year-round.
Just Born.
Is it like what you would consider a name brand candy? Like Sour Patch, I consider like a name brand.
Yeah,
candy.
It's along that type of thing. Yeah, it's got a recognizable name. I mean, I guess I don't know how much.
I'm
gonna
go Airheads on this one.
Nope.
Hang on a second. It's gummy or it's chewy?
It's chewy, yeah.
Starburst?
Kind of a jelly bean sort of consistency.
What? Sour or no?
No, I've hardly ever had these, but...
Are they
what?
Like,
have I? Do you
I've had
have
their sister candy. Their sister candy
they gotta
is...
be like, is it like Sugar Babies
hot
or something?
Hot Tamales.
Oh, Mike and Ike's.
Mike and Ike's.
What?
And they're more popular than Peeps. So.
I mean, that's not too surprising.
I mean, Mike and Ike's are actually good.
So,
I'm not
gonna
lie.
Are we going to go? Let's not go there now.
Okay, let's not.
We have to talk about this later sometime.
Save it for the candy podcast.
Well, yeah. Candy.
We can't have a candy argument this late.
Not now.
Can we, though?
Okay, hold. Not now, and not after. We have to do this on a podcast sometime.
Yeah, we're on a podcast right now.
But do you want to take the time right
now?
No. Okay, so hold your thoughts.
They won't listen to this. They don't care.
Okay, we're going to come back to the candy argument.
Okay,
for now.
We'll shelve that for a later date.
Okay.
All right, so I'm
done. We can put it in our Patreon.
I like that idea.
Bonus.
Shout out, hit us up on Patreon at AnswersMayVary. At Gmail? I don't know what our Patreon is, but we'll put it in the description.
Yeah, it'll
for
be
sure.
in the description.
Landon, what's our Patreon info? We don't know.
We don't know. We'll
get it. Just look below in the description.
Yeah,
it'll be down there.
We'll hit you up at the end of the show or the notes or something. Yeah. Okay, so I think that's going to be it for Kinda Spicy. Thanks for all your spicy things.
Yeah, it's great.
Sounds good.
Okay, our final segment is called Positive Vibes, and it's just basically an encouraging event or news story or just something heartwarming. So, Brandon, I think you've got something prepared, right?
Okay, well, we've gone a little long already, so I'm going to try to keep this pretty short. But I found this pretty cool story in the Los Angeles Times, actually, a couple weeks ago, and I saved it because I thought it'd be really cool to share on here. So, basically, there is this neighborhood in California that is very prestigious and tends to be more wealthy. You know, I think it might be a gated community, I'm not sure. And there was an Asian couple, I call them the C's because it's S-I, I don't know how you pronounce it, but they moved into that community just pretty recently. I think this is happening sometime last year. And they started experiencing quite a bit of harassment at night in this community because of their ethnicity, because I believe they're Asian, I believe they're Chinese. And so basically kids would come by at night and shout racial slurs at them and throw rocks, and yeah, it was getting like pretty brutal. So they were trying to figure out like what to do about this. And this is like, I mean, you would maybe expect that more in the hood or something, but this is like a wealthy community. But they started trying to think of things to do. So they put in like a security system and like built a fence around it and did all these things, but still didn't really help. Like their kids would be scared at night and couldn't sleep. And yeah, just really kind of a terrible situation. Wow. So they reached out to one of their neighbors to kind of see like, what can we do about this? And she was horrified by the story and, you know, saw some of the security camera footage of what kids were doing and stuff. And so she was actually the one that took matters into her own hands and put out a Facebook post for their neighborhood asking for volunteers to come watch their house at night. Ooh. And the entire neighborhood pretty much showed up. Like people just really like they had like a sign up sheet or whatever, and people just filled it right up to stand there at night. And it didn't like completely stop it, but it made like a huge difference just to have like the rest of the neighborhood there from 6 p.m. to midnight every night. There would be a couple people there to
just kind of outside, yeah, like
just in the front yard or whatever. I think they hung up like some Japanese lanterns and stuff, kind of make it look more festive and stuff. And then actually about a couple days after that, then they held like a little bit of a festival thing and got to do some traditional, it was like a Chinese holiday, and everyone kind of participated, and they had like the dragon dances and stuff like that. Anyway, it just kind of caught my attention because I was like, that's a really cool, you hear about all the like negative things of racism and stuff like that, and in some ways this is still, you know, a sad story that they're being treated like that, but I think it's really cool how you know, there are still good hearted people out there that just really pulled together as a community to make them feel welcome and to try to enter into their culture a little bit. And I think that's something that I want to try to do is, you know, even maybe if you're not someone who like consciously looks down on people because of their race or whatever, I think it's really cool if we can like try to experience new cultures and like be willing to step into things that are different and out of our comfort zone to learn more about someone else's heritage. So
that's really awesome. Yeah, thanks for bringing that and sharing it with us. Are there any final comments or summaries or questions before we wrap this up?
Eat more chicken.
Oh, wow.
Eat more peeps. Peeps,
yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, my. So are we going to get Chick-fil-A to sponsor us next
year? Oh, yeah,
time?
For sure.
Oh, certainly. Okay. Not sponsored, but would definitely welcome.
Exactly. Well, it's been good discussing things with you guys, and unless there's something else someone was about to say, I think we're going to wrap it up. So, yeah, thanks to our listeners for joining us, and till next time, this has been Answers May Vary.
Peace out.
See ya.
See ya.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Answers May Vary podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would appreciate it if you go leave us a 5-star rating and also a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, we would be interested in hearing from you if you have any questions you would like us to discuss or feedback on the show. You can send all that to answersmayvarypodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're interested, please go follow us on Instagram at answersmayvarypodcast or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/answersmayvary.